Blog Talk Radio.
Thanks for joining us once again on Queensbury Rules Radio. I'm Patrick Connor of QueensburyRules.com. I will be joined shortly here by Castle Chalice's cousin, Goblin Goblet, a.k.a. James Foley. I'm not sure if anybody knows that about him, but that's the name he sometimes goes by. But he'll be with us in just a minute. We have another show today where it's going to be just James and I basically riding a duet here. James.
Hey, Patrick.
Hey.
What's going on?
What's going down, brother?
Same old.
So I don't know if you heard what I was saying, but I accidentally kind of let the cat out of the bag about your you being Castle Chalice's cousin, and
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
No problem. You know, I actually
About letting everybody know and about you being his cousin.
And I apologize for allowing my cousin to go on national television and broadcast a fight.
Yeah, I was thinking that your broadcasting name should be something like Goblin Goblet. I think that that's just appropriate.
Well, I know it's early in his career here, but I think we can safely say, you know, Larry Merchant, Don Dunphy, Castle Chalice, three greatest boxing commentators of all time.
Lampley figures somewhere in there too, but I mean, yeah, I'd have to agree with your ruling there. It's pretty solid. So since we basically already opened the door for last night's Fox broadcast, did you catch some of that?
I didn't. I actually just I flipped over right at the end of it, so I caught a little bit of Castle taking us away and talking about what a great card it was. But I wasn't horribly interested in it, and you know my my guilty pleasure of being a tennis fan. Actually, I'm not really guilty about it, but so I was watching the U.S. Open, and I was noticing some pretty unfavorable reviews of the Fox card, so I didn't really see the need to turn it over. By the time I got onto it, it was done. I just saw Colazzo get the decision.
I've said it many times before about Friday Night Fights on the show, because you never watch that shit, but yeah. you didn't really miss all that much in terms of the boxing action. It was like following this stuff on Twitter was probably more entertaining once again.
I had forgotten all about it until yesterday when it was going on. And apparently, yeah, it seems like I didn't miss a whole lot.
No, you didn't really miss a whole lot. I mean, basically it was some kind of like, you know, kind of hyped up by Paul Malignaggi and Castle Chalice in terms of what the card actually was and how good it was. And it wasn't really that good. It was basically, it was basically Louis Colazzo facing a guy that looked outmatched, and then Olympian Rashid Warren facing a guy that looked outmatched. So, I mean, yeah, you didn't really miss a whole lot, but I thought that it bore, you know, bringing up just because the rest of the year is going to be pretty jam-packed with boxing. There are going to be a couple weekends here and there that don't really have a whole lot, but even with a crappy card, I know that I'm kind of one of those people that watches everything or whatever, but still, just to have more boxing, I think, is good.
It's going to be great fall.
In the right direction.
I've already had my divorce papers drawn up.
Yeah, I'm hoping that you're not going to have to use those.
Well, it depends. We're going to see. But there's a lot of Saturday nights where I'm going to be preoccupied.
Well, okay, so the question is then, who is Mrs. Foley going for, Mayweather or Canelo?
She's going to be going for Canelo, but I think she's she thinks that, I mean, she likes Floyd. She doesn't think anyone has a real chance to beat him. She doesn't know a whole lot about boxing, but just on what little she's seen. So she's probably picking Floyd and rooting for Canelo.
That kind of applies to a whole bunch of people, I would say.
Yeah, it's a standard wife pick, you know.
for sure. You know, and you can't resist the redheaded Mexican guy in with the Under Armour, you know, spotlight and whatnot on him.
Yeah, well, not to turn this too homoerotic here, but my wife loves Amir Khan. Every time that guy fights, I have to hear about how he could be a model and all this stuff. So her heart is already taken.
Since we're already basically on the subject of you know, guys that our wives seem to like for you know, whatever reason, sexy. Basically, my wife, I would say, really seems to like Lucas Matisse.
Really?
So I don't know. I have nothing against that. If that gives you a pass to get that fantasy.
Yeah, if you can, I mean, if you can pull off getting that haircut and the wife would be cool with it, I think that'd be awesome.
That's exactly what I'm thinking. I need that rat tail. I need that weird little kind of, you know, MMA mohawk type thing going on. I need it. And some tattoos.
Yeah, I've never seen a guy pull off the mohawk with bangs quite as well as Matisse did.
Nobody does. Not since about 1984. So he's brought it back in a big way, and I like it. So I have a question about this weekend's Showtime card. So as many of us know, because, I don't know, it's been not a a dry couple of weekends, but I think that not a lot of people were really looking forward to another heavyweight kind of main event. But I think that this Seth Mitchell, Chris Ariola fight has a little bit of potential in terms of, you know, what it might bring. But, you know, we've talked about it briefly on other shows. So my question is, does this fight this weekend, since Tony Thompson lost recently here, is this going to be, you know, the best American heavyweight? We've talked about that phrase a couple times on other shows. So what do you think that this card, that fight means this weekend?
No, I don't think so. I don't think the best American heavyweight is at stake. But
do you think that basically firmly rests with Deontay Wilder at this point, or?
Maybe you still have to give it to Thompson, even though, you know, I had forgotten that he was fighting, and I don't think we even mentioned it on the show, but he just lost the decision to Pulev last weekend, right? Or two weekends ago. And,
yeah, it was 2 weekends ago. I think we were just busy on the show. I think that we just didn't even get to it.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that really even demotes him from that spot yet, because Wilder still hasn't fought anybody on that level. Thompson has better wins. You know, does a loss to Pulev against a loss to Bermain Stibern, you know, where would you put Thompson against Ariola? It's tough. I mean, there's no real clear guy. I think of the young guys, you know, yeah, I probably like Deontay better than, say, you know, a Bryant Jennings, or, you know, I think Seth Mitchell's kind of been exposed. But, yeah, I don't think that necessarily makes him the best. I don't know. It's a tough call. You know, you might have had Eddie Chambers in the discussion, and he's moved down to cruiserweight and obviously did not look good in that fight. So, there's not really a clear-cut guy. You might have to still just have Thompson ranked the highest, because he basically lost to a guy who was probably already ranked ahead of him as far as the heavyweight rankings.
Well, we talked about it, I think it was last week, after William Detloff came on and left. Basically, I'd said that Tim Starks had brought up, I think, via tweet, I'm not really sure, but he had said that he thought that this weekend's fight was some really ambitious matchmaking, I guess you could say, because a lot of people maybe about a year and a half ago were looking towards Seth Mitchell as a potential, you know, I don't know, American hope, I guess you could say. I mean, it's kind of been between he and Deontay Wilder in terms of who the next, you know, potential American heavyweight star or whatever could be. And Seth Mitchell was derailed a little bit by Jonathan Banks. However, the win in the rematch, and then he kind of just has a story that I guess people seem to like. So, I mean, I think that this fight this weekend has potential to, you know, basically totally unseat one guy or the other. Because I know that Seth Mitchell only has one loss, he avenged it, but in today's world, and especially with networks not really wanting to take a lot of chances with heavyweights, a loss means a lot. And I can't really see Seth Mitchell lasting 12 with Ariola, assuming Chris, you know, comes out blasting. But I don't know. How do you think the fight's actually going to play out, though?
Well, I like I said last week, you know, I think that I would favor Ariola heavily. I'd basically be shocked if Mitchell somehow finds a way to win the fight. I would be stunned. Now, certainly, if he can do that, as long as it's not another dreary kind of 12-round boring, you know, not non-effort, and both guys look like crap, and Mitchell just happens to get the decision. If he can actually definitively beat Ariola, then I think he's put himself right back to where he was, and that's great for him. But I just don't see any way that it can happen.
Well, I mean, with all due respect to Chris Ariola, and I do, you know, I am basically a fan of him for the most part, but with all due respect to him, you know, he's lost pretty much every time he's stepped up to a certain level. Now, of course, up in the lead of this fight, it's going to be, yeah, there's no more of that. I'm going to get in better shape, et cetera, et cetera. And that's fine, and I'll still probably continue to root for the guy. But I think that it also says something about Seth Mitchell in general as a fighter, that not a lot of people are expecting him to step in and win when, you know, if you look at it from a kind of an objective standpoint, it seems as though Chris Ariola is being brought in as a gatekeeper type, kind of a litmus test for Seth Mitchell to see where exactly he could go. And so I think that that's kind of saying a lot about, you know, people's doubt in Seth Mitchell's chin and his overall ability, that, you know, they're not really seeing too much of a chance for him here.
Mm-hmm. I haven't seen anybody giving him much of a chance. And I think, like you were saying, I don't think Mitchell is anywhere near that level that's going to beat Ariola. You're right. I mean, there does appear to be a ceiling and a group of guys who will beat Ariola, but I don't think Mitchell's there.
Yeah, I would basically agree. Although, of course, yesterday, just because I was bored and didn't really have anything else to do in the morning, I watched a handful of fights just to kind of, you know, prep myself, I guess, for today and for the discussion on this fight, just because, you know, it's probably the biggest fight, at least in the U.S., that's going on this weekend. And so I was watching Ariola's last handful of fights, and then I watched two or three Seth Mitchell fights. And, I mean, watching Seth Mitchell, I don't really think that he's a really nuanced guy, so you can pick up who he is as a fighter in a couple of fights, in my opinion. But, you know, I was watching Chris Ariola versus Chaz Witherspoon and versus Travis Walker. And then I had totally forgotten that he got hurt pretty good against Travis Walker. And like, it was either the first or second round. So, I mean, I think that I'm not going to try to, you know, beat a dead horse too much about, you know, Seth Mitchell potentially maybe in some mystical universe having a chance. But, you know, Chris Ariola can be hurt, and he has gotten hit quite a bit in the fairly short amount of time that he's been, you know, towards the top of the heavyweight division. So, yeah, I mean, I guess there's that whole puncher's chance thing. But usually when you start talking about
that,
I mean, the chance is low.
Yeah, I would think this would be a much more incredible upset than Johnny Gonzalez beating Abner Mares, and that was really surprising too. But I think this would be much, even way more shocking than that. Because even though Mitchell seems like he can punch, but I don't know. I mean, it seems like Ariel has been in with bigger punchers and survived it. And that's really, like you said, I think Mitchell's only hope. You know, if Ariel is aggressive and he's coming forward throwing a lot of punches, I just think Mitchell's going to get pretty overwhelmed and end up getting taken out relatively early. Because, you know, we've seen the chin, and it just doesn't look good. And I don't think the few months that he's had is enough time. You know, he didn't look really much better in the Banks rematch, even though he got the decision. And, I mean, that was only a few months ago. I don't think it's, you know, there's been enough time for him to radically reinvent himself and suddenly discover how to, you know, like we always talk about Klitschko coming back, looking like he had a weak chin and it was always going to be a liability. And he managed to adjust his style to where, you know, he kind of neutralized that. But I don't see how Mitchell can do that.
He doesn't have the same type of, you know, pedigree, boxing pedigree, as either Klitschko brother has. I mean, you know, both started in either martial arts or boxing fairly young. And, well, regardless, you know, I just keep coming up with these little, like, counterpoints in my head that are totally, you know, going against the conclusion that we've pretty much both come to.
Yeah, Ariola's had some wear and tear. I mean, I think if you were trying to sell Mitchell's chances, you kind of have to think that, you know, he would need a version of Ariola that's just completely slowed down and almost basically shot. And he's obviously had some tough fights, and he's coming off a pretty rough loss where he just got, you know, took a lot of punishment. So I think that's maybe the one kind of like glimmer you could cling to if you were trying to sell Mitchell's chances here. But, you know,
Not a lot of people, you know, spoke up for him in the Banks rematch either. You know, a lot of people, including myself, were like, "Yeah, I can't imagine Jonathan Banks doing, you know, much else different." But of course, he did. He fought like he was given one of those Ann Wolf black pills. It was pretty bad.
Yeah, and he, you know, but he caught Mitchell early in that fight and hurt him again, and then just didn't seem to have anything left in his tank. And Mitchell was able to do just enough to clearly win the decision on points, but certainly didn't wow anybody and didn't really make the definitive statement that I think he needed to create more excitement. I mean, even if he had knocked out Banks, I still think he'd be a pretty heavy underdog against Ariola. But the fact that he didn't, and he seemed so tentative and he was hurt again, and, you know, it just doesn't appear to be boding well for him going into this. I mean, Ariola's a really legit, tough guy, and I think a level above a guy like Jonathan Banks. And, yeah, I just don't think Mitchell's going to be able to compete with him.
I think that it kind of illustrates the difference between someone who's a good boxer and a good athlete who has taken up boxing. And we've seen just tons and tons of those in the last maybe 15 years or so, especially. But, you know, like, it's just the difference between looking good when you're in against an overmatched opponent and looking like you have it all together and you're throwing solid punches and textbook stuff, good footwork, et cetera, et cetera. And then as soon as any type of, you know, any type of issue is thrown your way, any type of, you know, difficult situation, then all that stuff kind of goes out the window, like we've seen with Seth Mitchell a couple times. But his power has bailed him out. In any event, I mean, I don't mean to go on and on about this fight, but I think at the very least it's interesting. I think that there is a really good chance that Chris Ariola, you know, comes out blasting early and gets like an early stoppage or something like that. But if not, and if he is worn, or if he is, you know, if he's out of shape and hasn't trained like he meant it, then it could open the door for Seth Mitchell to take a kind of the same type of decision that I would think it would be kind of a similar type of just really careful decision if he were to win a decision against Chris Ariola. So anyway,
it just seems that what it's taken to beat Ariola in the past has been more than that. And I don't know if Mitchell's can do that. You know, I mean,
I think that usually when Chris Ariola loses, it's against a guy, in the losses that, you know, I can think of off the top of my head, Domek, Vitaly Klitschko, Stivern, you know, those guys were able to, at the very least, you know, if not totally hurt him, but, you know, at least rock him with their power and throw a lot of punches and, you know, kind of keep him at the distance that they wanted and stuff. So I'm not really sure that Seth Mitchell is capable of doing that. That's pretty much, that's it.
I mean, like you said, you know, I think Mitchell has the heart and the desire, and he has a great attitude, and you want to root for him. But like you said, it's like not having that foundation of having grown up in the gym and been boxing for so long. It's like when he gets hurt, he doesn't have the you know, he can't go back to like his instinct and his muscle memory to figure out how to really defend himself. And so you've seen that against Banks. You know, he got, I think Mitchell got hurt in the first round or two against Chaz Witherspoon too in the fight before Banks, and it just seems that like against Ariola he's going to be in that same situation, and I just don't see him being able to really fight out of it against a guy like this. But you know, we'll see.
I mean, I think you could do worse. I mean, this is the kind of card. I know it's a lot more money.
Well, I was going to say I'd love to see something like this on Fox Sports 1. But I know it's a much bigger budget, but, you know, really, should it be? I mean, is it really that big of a fight?
Well, we have it's kind of an ESPN 8 the Ocho situation, but in a couple weeks we have, I think it's scheduled on Fox Sports 2, is Sean Porter versus Julio Diaz, their rematch. So, I mean, I think that, oh, and also on the undercard, I think is Badu Jack, who we saw not too long ago, and also Hugo Centeno Jr. But so it's obviously a step up, I would think, from the card that we saw last night. But,
yeah,
it, you know.
I guess so. I mean, the Porter-Diaz rematch is interesting.
Yeah, it's not a high-level card, and we're probably not going to get high-level cards from, you know, Fox Sports 9, 7, 1, 2, or whatever. But it's more interesting than what we got last night, at least from the outset, I would think. Well, on the undercard of Mitchell Arreola is Rafael Marquez fighting Efrain Esquivias. And I'm not really entirely sure what to think about that fight myself. I haven't really given it a whole ton of thought in terms of dissecting it for, you know, whose style is going to be better or whatever. The question for me is, I mean, should Rafael Marquez really be fighting?
Yeah. It's the question we ask about a lot of guys.
I mean, I hate to be all, you know, up in these fighters' business and tell them when they should or shouldn't be fighting, but man, I mean, Rafael Marquez has just taken a lot of punishment in the 2000s, and so I just kind of feel tentative about him still going on, coming off a loss, you know,
yeah,
losing to guys that he probably would not have lost to 5 years ago, and I don't know, man.
Was his last fight that fight against Nishioka? That was maybe like
no,
last
it
year,
was
the year before that, or has he fought?
No. He lost to Cristian Mijares.
Okay.
Not that long ago by TKO.
I didn't
and
even
he,
know that.
He wound up fighting through a pretty bad cut.
Yeah, you know, he's obviously not going to be able to compete against the elite guys in the division, because even the guys he's lost to can't compete against the best guys in these divisions, 122, 126. And he has taken a ridiculous amount of punishment. So, you know, I'm not literally looking forward to seeing him. I think this looks like a winnable fight, but, you know, what's the point? I mean, it's like putting Shane Mosley in against the guy, against guys who are just way beneath the level that he was fighting at for a decade, and trying to kind of, and I don't see what the intention is. You have to assume that it's, obviously the fighters want to make money and they want, you know, but from the promotional standpoint, you have to think that maybe they're trying to kind of build these guys back up and then milk them for a bigger fight against somebody who's really going to hurt them. And, you know, Mosley squeaked past Pablo Cano. I think Marquez will win this fight more handily than Shane did, but what's kind of the end game here, you know? If it's just a guy who's just doing his job to make, because he needs to make money, then you can't begrudge him that. But for as good as some of these guys were, to see them still fighting as shells of themselves, let alone people like Roy Jones, who's just completely, you know, has gone from basically the best fighter in the world into, like, you know, a guy who, you know, club-level fighter.
Yeah, and, well, I mean, the guy that he's facing, Efrain Esquivias, he's been on TV this year, but he hasn't had a win in about 18 months. So I think that they're, you know, aiming relatively low, which I guess if Marquez is going to keep fighting is good. You know, I mean, at least it probably won't be a situation where he gets into a fight and takes a ton of punishment. But at the same time, he's, if I'm not mistaken, Rafael Marquez is 5-5 in his last 10 fights, with three of the losses coming, you know, coming early. One of them was, I think, an arm injury versus Juan Manuel Lopez. So it wasn't like he got, you know, obliterated or anything, but he was also, you know, kind of losing momentum a little bit in that fight and got dinged around a little bit. And the point is that, like you said, he's taken a lot of shots. So, I don't know, at some point it's just kind of, somebody has to step in for the guy. You know, he's secured his legacy. I'm sure that he's made a decent amount of money, probably not as much as he should have made, but yeah, I would say if I were in that position, it would be time. It would be time to just say, all right, let's let it go here, because there's no clear aim.
Yep. Well, it's the nature of the sport.
Indeed. it's a tough dichotomy. I don't even know what that word means.
And when the, because there's a, you know, there's guys who are around, you know, the same age, late 30s, early 40s, journeyman type fighters who are still fighting, who have taken tons of losses, but they were never on the real championship caliber level. They weren't in fight of the years. You know, they didn't make the kind of impression, and they weren't superstars. And I mean, there how many? There's probably countless examples of that in the sport. So I think it's tough to see a guy go from the top level to this. But that's, you know, I guess it's kind of the nature.
And since we're kind of on that similar subject, I guess, it was announced the other day that Nonito Naide is going to be taking on Victor Chinian in a rematch of a fight that was about 5 years ago that, you know, Victor Chinian kind of like he was on a tear and then wound up getting knocked out, and I think it was five rounds by Nonito Naide. So I know that obviously the end game is to put Nonito in with, you know, somebody bigger, obviously, after this. But what do you think of that fight being made, period?
I'm not crazy about it. You know, I think it's I don't like it. I think there's probably were better options for Donaire. You know, I think this is a rematch that it, maybe it could have happened years ago, but Darchinian has lost several times on the top level to guys. You know, Donaire is talking up himself. I mean, he's the pound-for-pound guy and kind of regarded higher than Abner Mares for, you know, most, well, really, and until Donaire lost to Rigondeaux, and obviously now Mares lost. But, you know, he wants a fight with Mares. I mean, Mares beat Anselmo Moreno, who's a really good fighter who dominated Darchinian, won every round against him. You know, and that's the level that, I mean, Darchinian's at these higher weights and at his age, you know, he's not on a world-class level anymore. And, you know, I guess Donaire's coming off his first loss, and you want to come back and look good and kind of get back on the winning track. But, you know, I'm not particularly interested in it.
It just seems kind of odd to me. I mean, like I said, I know that it's,
well, they've been talking,
you know,
about doing it for a while, and Darchinian still has a name. And so it's kind of obvious what their angle is, but you think that there had to be better options out there.
And I'm sure that it's to lead to something else. You know, I'm sure that the aim here is that they're going to set up something bigger for Donaire, assuming he wins. And I think that that's a relatively safe assumption at this point. But it just seems kind of odd. Like, you know, I know that, like you said, Victor Chinian hit a couple losses, and so he had been calling for the rematch, but then lost a couple times and basically had no right to after that. But it just, I don't know, it seems almost like a kind of meaningless fight to me at this point. And I came to kind of like Victor Chinian after not liking him for many years because he's weird. He's got a weird style. It's kind of fun to watch. He punches hard. Yeah, it's just a weird fight for me to make, you know. And from what I hear, it's actually going to be on the undercard of something, which I thought was even more weird. But I don't know.
It's Mikey Garcia against, who is he fighting?
Oh, man, I'm drawing a blank here. I think it was Kieran Mulvaney who set us straight the other day about, you know, it being on the undercard, period. I just can't remember which undercard he was saying. But, I mean, you know, they invested a lot of money into Nonito Donaire with, you know, put him on a lot of kind of independent type of pay-per-views to get his name out there. And they succeeded for the most part because he wound up climbing up onto pound-for-pound lists. And even though he wasn't a big draw, and I don't think that his fights really got great, you know, numbers in terms of ratings either. But he definitely was, you know, firmly implanted in the consciousness of your average boxing fan. So it just, well, it seems odd to me that, you know, he loses to Rigondeaux, who is obviously very good, and then they're just really slow to get him back into the ring and then get him back in a co-feature against an old foe that he beat 5 years ago.
Yeah, it seems like kind of a get-well type of fight, and it's hard for HBO. You know, you obviously want to show, you know, a certain level of fighter on their airwaves, and I think Donaire definitely qualifies as that. But you also want them to be in competitive fights, you know, just something where there's some kind of intrigue. Or, and I don't see Darchinian having any chance here. You know, I actually think it's the Mitchell-Areola fight. I could see Mitchell having, you know, I just don't see that being really competitive, and I don't think the outcome is in doubt.
You're cutting out a little bit.
That's a problem. You know, HBO has kind of been falling behind Showtime, and Golden Boy's gotten really fortunate that a lot of their fights that seemed kind of one-sided, you know, turned out to be more competitive. But I think even stuff like, you know, Judah against Danny Garcia and Malignaggi against Broner, even though I didn't like either of those fights, even going in, I think there was still a little bit more, you know, sellability than a fight like this. I just don't get it. You know, I mean, De Niro already knocked the guy out. He's beaten better opponents recent years. I understand he's coming off a loss, but the way that Darchinian's career has been going and kind of the level he's at, I don't see any point in the rematch. You know, if De Niro wanted to take this fight, maybe they could have done that in another kind of independent pay-per-view and try to build him back up. But he needs to be on HBO either trying to avenge the loss to Rigondeaux, which is always going to be a blemish unless he gets back in the ring with him, or maybe moving on to fight somebody viable at 126. And I'm, you know, I'm not sure off the top of my head who that would be, and you know, maybe eventually a Mikey Garcia fight, but they have the same trainer. And, oh, they were also talking about putting him in with Gradovich if he can. I think Gradovich has to rematch Billy Dibb, but if he keeps that belt, that's somebody who De Niro might fight. And those are much, you know, more, way more intriguing fights. I mean, even against Gradovich, you'd make De Niro a huge favorite, but at least we haven't seen it before. And I think Gradovich is undefeated, so, you know, the guy doesn't know how to lose yet. He's got an aggressive style. He's bigger. I don't think Darchinian has anything to offer at this point for De Niro.
Well, there's something that I will say for HBO, and I don't know whether or not this was brought forth because Showtime had started doing more triple headers and quadruple headers and stuff like that, but HBO has, you know, of late been stepping up just a little bit and saying, all right, well, then I guess we should offer more fights. And so that card actually is, I think, what at least what I gathered from the information was that it was going to be also a triple header, so I guess, you know, that makes it sting a little bit less when you get an extra fight out of it, I think. But, yeah, it's still just odd.
Well, I think that they're doing a great job with some of these international fights that they've picked up. And they have shown some quality fights. And, then, of course, like Tim Bradley and Ruslan Provodnikov, you know, that was a top-ranked fight that looked like it was kind of maybe a mismatch. I mean, we didn't think Provodnikov was on the same level with Bradley, but, you know, this it unfolded the way that it did, and it was a great fight, in my opinion, still the fight of the year. But this is the risk here, is these top-ranked cards, because now HBO is kind of top-ranked, going to be their biggest provider of fights, and they're doing two big pay-per-views this fall, that you're going to get cards like this. And I'm trying to remember who Mikey Garcia is fighting, but it's nothing to get terribly excited about. And then Donaire, you know, you don't... These networks, it just would be nice if, you know, we didn't have to see these kind of, like, setup fights. Like, oh, it's part of a bracket, and eventually Donaire and Garcia are going to fight, or Donaire is going to fight Rigondeaux. It's like, let's just get to that. Because if they're only fighting once or twice a year, you know, it's not like the old days where they're fighting once every 2 months, and you can take some off-TV fights or take some fights on different networks. You know, it's like HBO or nothing, and
exactly. It's
so infrequent that you just like to see real championship-level fights.
Well, I mean, I'll take it even a step further and say that if they're going to be fighting 2 to 3 times a year, that those 2 to 3 fights need to be high-level fights. You know, I mean, if one of those fights happens to be like a unexpected early finish, like a Johnny Gonzalez versus Abdermattis, then get that guy back in the ring in 2 or 3 months. You know, he didn't take any damage. There's no reason not to, really. But yeah,
or
I mean,
like Golovkin's, like Golovkin's doing that. And he's fighting
off
of HBO. And I look at, you know, Mikey Garcia is coming back. I mean, not Mikey Garcia. Abner Mares is coming back, and he's probably going to rematch Gonzalez before the end of the year in December. You know, so you got to respect him. I mean, he's trying to get right back into it. And if he can win that rematch, depending on how that goes, you know, maybe they have a third fight to settle it. Or he just moves right along, and he's right back, you know, as one of those top guys. Donaire, I know he just had a kid, and you know, that's cool. He's taking some time off from the sport. But, you know, he just had a pretty damaging loss. And it would be nice for him to, you know, do something to try to kind of move back towards avenging that. I mean, I'd like to see him fight Rigondeaux. But if he's going to move to 26, at least fight a credible, you know, foe and, you know, kind of announce yourself in that division and try to get Rigondeaux to come to you, because Daenerys probably got a little bit more clout and money behind him. But, you know, he's a fighter who we all consider to be one of the best in the world for the last couple of years, right behind Mayweather, Pacquiao, Sergio Martinez, and Marquez were in there. And, you know, he takes this pretty bad loss just in terms of the way that it unfolded and the style and how easily Rigondeau was able to handle him. And, you know, it just seems like to do this kind of like comeback tour with Victor Chinian when there's really no mandate or desire to see that fight, it, you know, it's not going to really endear himself to fans.
Well, and I don't mean to, you know, pile on Nonito at this point, but I just haven't really seen a whole lot from him. And maybe I'm reading the wrong things, the wrong sources, I don't know. But I haven't seen a whole lot from him saying, you know, fuck that, I lost, and I need to, you know, avenge that loss. Let's get back in there. To me, it, you know, even right after the fight, Nonito didn't really sound all that enthused about it. Bob Arum didn't sound that enthused about it. HBO doesn't really seem like they're very interested in it. Yet they're, for whatever reason, interested in putting Nonito Donaire in a co-feature or whatever, you know, against the guy he beat 5 years ago. It's just, I don't know.
Well, there was too many people telling him that, like, you know, trying to create this impression that Rigondeau had, like, unfairly won that fight or stole the fight or that he boxed in it. You know, he was too defensive and you know, boring and he stunk it out. And that's not what happened. You know, and maybe Nonito started to believe some of that stuff.
Well, and maybe it was boring to some people, you know, and that's fine. People are allowed to think that a guy who boxes or, you know, moves in that way or whatever is boring. That's fine. You know, everybody can have their preferences, but yeah, there was nothing unfair about it. There was nothing that crazy about what he did. And, you know, me personally, obviously I enjoy brawls and good action and stuff like that. But to see a guy who is so highly regarded and, you know, in reality, a very good fighter get totally just, you know, basically undressed like that, that was, to me, exciting. That was, to me, entertaining. And, you know, just watching a guy who obviously is a good fighter have absolutely no answer, it was weird, but it was entertaining. So, I don't know. I think that, obviously,
Rigondeau is not the most popular guy. Beat him the same type of manner that Floyd Mayweather's used to beat opponents throughout his career and become the biggest, you know, the most respected boxer and the biggest superstar. And I don't think Rigondeau's going to be a superstar, but, you know, you got to respect what he did in that fight. And, you know, I think a lot of competitive fighters and athletes, you know, if in their position, being the guy who is so highly regarded and losing that huge fight, you
Chicago,
know, you want to get that back, you know?
You cut out just a little bit, so we missed a chunk of that.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, I'm just saying that I think Donaire, I'm just surprised that he doesn't seem more, you know, vocal about wanting to get revenge on the guy who really handed him, you know, basically his first defeat on the highest level. I think he might have lost one of his, like, his second professional fight, but...
Yeah, and it was on a, you know, a world stage. It was against a guy that, you know, a lot of people gave Rigondeau a solid chance going into the fight. It's not like it was a huge upset or anything necessarily, but, you know, in comparison, Rigondeau was not on any pound for pound list. It was, I think, only what his 11th pro fight. Is that's significant. So yeah, obviously I'm not in any position to tell HBO who they should or should not be televising, but I'd like to see that guy back. So there seems to be a small showing of support to get Rigondeau back on the air. And ideally, I think that if they're going to put him back on, and if Donaire is going to, in my, you know, view, probably walk through Darchinian again, then that's the fight they need to be aiming for next, like real soon.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, what else is going on this weekend? Oh, yes. This weekend, Ricky Burns is also going to be taking on Raymundo Beltran. So I think that we also briefly talked about that, and I brought it up last week on the show because I was an idiot and thought that it was happening this past weekend. I don't know why I got my dates mixed up, but it's happening this coming weekend. So my question for you is, Raymundo Beltran, he seems to me like a guy who's kind of middle of the road. Do you think that he has the quality necessary to take out a Ricky Burns?
Yeah, I could see him giving Burns a really tough fight. Burns had a tough time in his last fight. I'm trying to remember who he was fighting. He was like a Colombian, a little bit slicker boxer type. Do you remember that? And then the guy, you know, I think had a pretty good lead on the cards and then ended up hurting his hand. Yeah. And Burns.
Yeah, it was Jose Gonzalez.
Okay. And Burns withstood a lot of punishment in that fight and really, you know, showed a lot of heart to come back. And I, you know, legitimately, I mean, it was unfortunate the way that it ended, that it appeared to some that Gonzalez basically just kind of threw in the towel. But you have to give Burns credit because he did turn the tide a little bit and, you know, caught Gonzalez some big shots, and eventually Gonzalez quit, whether, you know, his hand was broken or whatever the reason. Gonzalez didn't want to continue and Burns was there, you know, ready to go. You know, I think that Beltran doesn't have as sophisticated of a style as Gonzalez does. He's going to, I think, basically be walking towards him. But, he's a tough fighter, and he's really kind of worked his way to this title shot here. And, you know, the impression that I get is that he's pretty much going to, you know, this is make or break. I mean, he knows what's at stake here. And Burns, he's not unbeatable, so it wouldn't surprise me if Beltran was able to rough him up and win some rounds and get a close decision. I mean, it's going to be tough being on, you know, on Burns' home court, but I think it's going to be a good fight.
And especially, I think, because you know, from what I've seen of Ricky Burns, which is actually a decent amount, he seems to me more like a type of guy who works hard in the ring. He's himself doesn't really do a whole lot of things that you would consider them, you know, elite. He's not a huge puncher. He's not, you know, an absolutely terrific boxer, but he works hard and he basically squeezes just about all he can out of what he has in the ring. And so I respect that, but, you know, I think that there is an opening there for Beltran to get some work done and push him. And, you know, I think that Beltran's probably got a little bit more power than Ricky Burns does. He's got a handful of losses, but, you know, he seems to also win fights mostly, you know, or at least against upper echelon type of guys. He seems to win those fights by decision more often than not. But he himself is a hard worker, so I think that it's probably going to shape up to be a fairly exciting fight.
Well, and I think Beltran, you know, in his role as being kind of a gatekeeper who's really earned his shot here by beating the guys that were, you know, the up-and-coming contenders that were supposed to, like, you know, put him on their resumes, he's been in with really talented fighters. Now, probably nobody who's quite as, you know, confident and smart as Ricky Burns, but I think certainly guys who have as much boxing ability, if not more, and he's been able to get those wins. So I don't think he's going to be out of his depth here by any means. But, you know, Burns is like we said, I mean, he's a tough guy. He's kind of one-dimensional in the sense. He's pretty straightforward boxer-puncher type. Nothing, you know, terribly elite about him. But, you know, he does have, you know, that confidence and the will, and he's in his home, you know, his backyard. And he's going to have huge crowd support and likely get the benefit of the doubt from the judges in the close rounds. And, you know, taking away from that Gonzalez fight, I think Burns has to feel confident about the fact that he was able to withstand, you know, what looked like, I mean, he was just, originally it was like a boxing lesson, and then it was starting to turn into kind of a beating that he was taking, and he hung in there and managed to come back and make the guy quit. Now, I mean, the guy had an injury, yeah, but at the same time, I don't think he wanted to go back out there. I mean, he was gassed. And so I think this could be a really good fight. And I wouldn't be surprised by the outcome either way. But I think that because of the fact that if it is close, you would think that Burns is going to get the credit for that. I think you have to favor Burns probably by a decision.
Yeah, I'd say that that's probably the smart pick. If you're going to put money on it, that's probably the smartest, you know, bet to lay down, you know, needless to say. But I don't know. I mean, it might be because I'm just a little bit biased because Beltran is, you know, in part managed by Emily Pendelakis, who has been listening to our show and supporting us and stuff. So, of course, I've been able to see a lot of things that she posts about Beltran and his training and stuff. And, you know, like I said, I admit my bias here, but he does look good. He does sound like he's very focused and he's going to be coming in to, you know, give a really game effort. But either way, yeah, I think that it will be probably an exciting fight because, you know, they're both guys who like to throw. So I'm looking forward to it. I think that it should be pretty decent myself. That's pretty much it for this weekend, though. There's not really a whole lot aside from that going on this weekend. But I actually did want to ask you if you saw the second episode of All Access.
I did. Come on, how could I not catch that, right?
Of course. So.
Yeah, I thought this episode was better than the first one, which I felt like the first one, and it's tough with an introduction episode. You know, I don't know if you remember 24/7 for the Marquez Pacquiao 4. The first episode was basically recapping all the first three fights, and I thought they did a really good job with that. You know, it was kind of inventive, different kind of structure. With this All Access, you know, I thought the first episode was just, it was all basically from the press tour and both guys saying, I'm going to win, and it didn't seem, you know, it seemed very kind of promotional rather than, you know, documentary. But I think this episode was better. I think you saw some good, you know, I think Floyd is kind of opening up a little bit more, and, you know, I liked it when he was, you know, balking at the idea that what's Canelo had been, you know, knocking out his sparring partners and all that stuff. I thought that was funny. You know, the appearance of Mosley's monkey is always welcome. And there was another part that I liked when Floyd just called Canelo Chucky. Okay, I think he should play that one up a little bit more. So I thought it was good. I mean, as far as getting me hyped for the fight, you know, I don't know. I mean, I was so hyped for it a while ago that it's not that type of thing. Like, I remember watching, you know, like the Cotto Margarito rematch 24/7.
Oh, you're cutting out again, son of a bitch.
Yeah, and the Martinez
You're cutting out off and on.
Oh, crap, I'm sorry. Can you hear me better now?
No, it's okay. Yeah, no, you're fine. Good.
Well, I just think on some of the 24/7s, they just did such a great job of even matchups you're really excited for. Like Cotto Margarito, too. I thought the 24/7 was just fantastic for that. It really hyped you up. Same thing with like Martinez and Chavez. You know, I thought those 24/7s were really well done. Here, you know, it's probably not going to affect me that much because I'm already pretty hyped on it. So, you know, the show really didn't do anything to make me kind of more like, you know, fuck, 2 weeks, you know, I can't wait.
Yeah.
So, but I thought the second episode was better than the first.
I will say that I got just a little bit turned on when Floyd was sexually harassing his physical therapist.
Yeah.
I liked it.
And where's Miss Jackson?
She's calling her Uma
Thurman
or
now?
Like Kill Bill or something like that. I will admit, you know, usually, and like I said last week, usually I'm pretty, you know, nonplussed by Floyd's antics. You know, at the very least, I'm usually kind of just over, you know, the bullshit and the usual, you know, hard work, dedication type shit. But I thought that it was pretty funny. There were actually a couple parts where I was cracking up. It was pretty decent as far as the old Floyd Mayweather reality TV goes.
Yeah, I thought that was funny when Ellerby was talking about Canelo's management being idiots and offering them the catch weight.
Well, what do you think about that? Because I actually was, when I was watching that, I was thinking about that. And I mean,
yeah.
I kind of have a slightly different take, but what
so
is
do
your
I.
take on that?
My take on it is that I 100% think that the catch weight, you know, probably, if it didn't originate from Floyd's camp, I think it was an insistence for the fight to happen. You know,
yeah.
I mean, I just think that, yeah, Ellerby's story was nice and all that, and it's certainly possible.
Like it was like a Ward Dawson situation where I'm not saying, you know, blame this guy or that guy, but it was like, I'll fight you anywhere. You know, I'll even go down to blah, blah, blah to fight you. And then the management's like, oh, you will. Oh, well, okay. You know, like before negotiations even start.
Well, I think Dawson was worse because Dawson went on a microphone on HBO and said, I'll go to 168, you know, months ahead of time before it was even being like, you know, I mean, obviously there had been some talk behind the scenes or he probably wouldn't have said that. But, you know, he really just showed his hand like immediately. And, you know, I'm sure that the Canelo camp at some point did because you see guys lobbying for big fights. I mean, you see Sergio Martinez, you know, like last year was saying I'd go to 154 to fight Floyd. I think at one point he even said he would go to 150 to fight Floyd.
Yeah.
So it's certainly possible Canelo. Yeah, I mean, Canelo's camp probably did say we could do a catch weight because they knew that that was crucial to the negotiation to get the fight done. But I don't believe that, you know, I mean, I think, look, the catch weight – It can only hurt Canelo and it can only benefit Floyd. So to say that it was like, oh, it was their idea.
Yeah.
It's a little bit disingenuous. They wouldn't be arguing for it
if it did nothing.
From a man who, you know, wears a beard that he paints with a Sharpie.
Well, if the catch weight were meaningless, they wouldn't have it. You know, that's really the bottom line for me.
Right.
If it did nothing at all, then they wouldn't be you know, stamping that down. But I mean, for me, it just kind of comes down to, like, you know, obviously not everybody has the same sense of, you know, I don't want to say honor necessarily, but I just feel like a guy should want to beat an opponent who's at his best, you know, and there shouldn't be any doors left open for people to discredit the wins. You know, obviously it's Floyd Mayweather. So he has the negotiating table on lockdown for the most part. So it's not like Canelo would have really had a huge choice anyway. But at the same time, it's like, well, just because you can, does that mean you should? I mean, in my opinion, no. And especially not when you're going on and on about how, you know, Pacquiao sucks because he's making guys fight at catch weights. And, you know, this title's not legit because it was at a catch weight. And then, you know, and so, of course, what gets brought up in my mind and that I've tweeted about a couple times is, what if Alvarez just comes in and is like, you know, fuck this. I'm not losing those extra pounds. I'm just going to go ahead and come in at 154. And a day before the fight, is Floyd Mayweather going to shun, what, $25, $30 million?
And more.
And to me,
probably more.
Yeah, I mean, to me, would that be shitty? Yeah, it would be shitty, but it would be just as shitty as when Floyd did it to Marquez. You know, it's the same thing. There's no difference.
I would love it. I would love to see it. That would be hilarious. Because, you know, Ellerby would be going nuts. Ellerby would be doing the same thing he was doing when Mickey Bay got knocked out. And
it would be,
that would be hilarious. What would Floyd do? I mean, you can't walk away from it then. You know, he pretty much has to do it. I'd like to see him come in at like 153, so it's just a pound, and then just say, I can't go any lower, sorry. Just immediately start drinking like a giant Fiji water.
Yeah.
You
that
know,
would
so,
be, that
that'd
would
be hilarious.
Hilarious.
But, you know, this is all part of Floyd wants to dictate every term that he possibly can, you know, and I think it's just as much about getting a psychological advantage as it is any kind of physical one, you know, and I won't discredit him for beating Canelo. I'm not going to use the catch weight as some kind of, oh, he might, you know, was weight drained. I think there's certain cases where that's like, you know, can legitimately be said. I mean, I think with De La Hoya against Pacquiao, you could definitely make a case that something wasn't right with De La Hoya's weight, and that, you know, that certainly diminished his chances in that fight. I think with Dawson against Ward, it was pretty obvious Dawson had trouble with it and didn't have his legs the entire fight. I mean, Ward's not a big puncher, and he knocks him down three times. You know, but cases like this,
hey,
where it's a pound or two. Yeah.
Is your phone battery running out or something?
Dude, I don't know. Is it keep cutting?
No.
I'm on a landline, so there is no battery.
Oh, I don't know. It's like beeping, but whatever. Anyway, might even be on my line. But go ahead. Catch weights.
Well, I'm just saying that with, like, you know, a pound or two. I mean, I understand everyone has like a physical limit that they just cannot go any lower. I don't think that that's the case here. You know, I didn't think that was the case with Cotto against Pacquiao. I think it sucks that some people, you know, discredited Pacquiao's win against Cotto, and people will probably do the same thing here. There'll be some kind of contingent that says that Canelo had problems with the weight. I mean, it all depends on how it plays out. But, you know, I don't think it's going to be as big of a factor in terms of the actual, you know, physicality of Canelo and his ability to, you know, do what he can do. But I think, you know, Floyd, I think, loves to be, you know, the star and be the A-side and have everything on his own terms, and I think this was just part of it. I mean, Canelo's last fight was at 153. I think he knows that 152, it could hurt him, if anything. Probably won't, but it's just another way of having things be on his terms, you know? And that's like with the Marquez situation where he, you know, he does things his own way and he just blows off what was previously agreed on.
Yeah, and, you know, and I personally, I didn't really, you know, shit an egg or anything like that when Floyd didn't come in at the agreed-upon weight against Marquez. I didn't really think it was that big a deal just because I would have been picking Floyd at any weight. You know, it's just a guy who's bigger and who's just better. And so I didn't really have a huge issue with it. But in terms of the principle of it, you know, I did think that it was kind of crappy because it certainly wasn't like Marquez was going to walk away from that payday. You know, and so essentially I just saw it as Floyd taking advantage of a guy that he could take advantage of, which is kind of crappy.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like I said, I just didn't really think that it was going to be, you know, that make that much of a difference.
And I don't think it affected the fight. And
I don't really know.
That's the beauty of it is, you know, how, I mean, Floyd walks around at like 148, 149. You know, he's already made weight for this fight like 2 weeks ago. You know, so how hard would it be for him to get to 144? I mean, to just dehydrate for like, you know, minimally for like a day. And he wouldn't even do that. You know, which I think is just funny. I mean, some of these guys, like, you know, are putting on like 15 pounds overnight and really just like killing themselves, you know, and he wouldn't go 2 pounds. I mean, it just, I think it's, he has such a mental edge over all of his opponents. And I think this is, it's all part of it from the pre to the when, the, before the fight starts, the way he, you know, handles himself in the referee's instructions. You know, it's just, it's all part of the Floyd show, you know, and it's ever since he's been able to call his own shots and ever since he's been, you know, the real A-side since beating De La Hoya, this is what he's done.
Yeah, and it's kind of like I was saying a minute ago, you know, just because you can, should you? I don't know. I guess it's not anything new. It's not like, you know, making big negotiating demands or is anything new. I mean, Ray Robinson threatened to walk out on a handful of fights in his career unless he got paid more last minute. And I mean, like, as they're about to do the ring walks and stuff like that. So it's not like, you know, he's invented anything by kind of, you know, getting these negotiating, you know, edges. But, yeah, I don't know. I guess I don't have to like it. So whatever. That actually kind of reminds me, though, when we were talking about All Access. It was announced yesterday that Time Warner and CBS came to an agreement, so there's no longer a freeze on the CBS and Showtime for people who have Time Warner, as I understand
it.
That's good. So, I mean, will it make a big difference in terms of buys or anything? We talked about that last week, and no, it probably won't. But, you know, at least now people can watch All Access and all this other type of buttered up stuff on their TV rather than, you know, online. What else did we have? Oh, that's right. I made a couple notes here about stuff that I wanted to talk about. And so
Hey, I'm just gonna try to switch my setup, but go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah, go right ahead.
So also in the last week or so, I want to say in the last maybe 4 or 5 days, it was announced that HBO is going to be picking up David Haye versus Tyson Fury coming up here pretty soon. And so initially, I think that it was kind of a concern with some American fans, I think, because it's an intriguing matchup. It's especially the pre-fight stuff. It's two guys that like to talk a lot of shit, you know, and two guys who I think could use a little bit of a boost in their career in general. So it's kind of nice that HBO is going to be picking up a fight, a heavyweight fight that,
hey,
which could be.
Patrick, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Oh, you're talking about Haye and Fury?
Yes. Yeah, I was just saying that HBO had picked it up, and, you know, it seemed a good fit because a couple of years ago they had pretty much said that they had washed their hands of the heavyweight situation, and who could really blame them for saying that? And so, you know, they haven't really been televising a whole lot of Klitschko fights, you know, only a couple here and there. They haven't really, you know, aside from Seth Mitchell and aside from, now Seth Mitchell is, you know, gone over to Showtime, of course, but in the last couple of years, they haven't really.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great fit for him.
Heavyweight,
you know, I think heavyweight boxing at its best is probably the most accessible for, you know, the non-kind of hardcore boxing fans because it's, you know, the heavyweight champion of the world, in theory, could beat up all of the champions from all the lower weight classes. So you basically have like the toughest, you know, if not on a pound for pound level, you know, the baddest man on the planet, as they used to call Mike Tyson, you know. And so it's obviously the division's in a big lull the last few years, kind of in the Klitschko era, and hasn't really, you know, it's gotten less and less popular among American audiences, but I think the networks are smart. I mean, they know that there's always the possibility you could have another
great fighter and somebody who would really captivate the masses the way that people have before.
And, I mean, I don't know that a whole lot of U.S. fans are all that familiar with David Haye. I mean, I don't really think that many U.S. fans are very familiar with heavyweights in general right now. I think that you would, if you would ask your average fan, they would say, oh, yeah, those two, like, really tall brothers that are, like, Russian, that's about all they know. So, you know, it might be a decent introduction of, you know, what's going on overseas at heavyweight that's at least somewhat worthwhile to HBO, you know, the folks that are going to be tuning into HBO. So I'm
yeah.
happy that got picked up on HBO myself.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I just wish that we could replace tonight's Marquez Bradley face-off with the Fury Haye face-off.
Are they doing a face-off?
Yeah, I think tonight's the debut. Marquez and Bradley.
I didn't even know that. Well, hey, let's get into some Marquez Bradley talk then, dude.
Definitely.
We haven't really, basically talked about that fight a whole lot. I mean, we've kind of mentioned it, like, in previous shows, but, man, for me, that's a tough fight to pick. I don't even really know which way I'm fully leaning yet. Do you have a dog in that race?
Well, I'm leaning Marquez. I think you kind of have to, you know, based on everything. But I don't know. I mean, Bradley's the kind of guy that if he, you know, no, I mean, if Bradley was back to his, you know, physical self, if he can, I think he's the quicker guy, and I think he can box and maybe stay out of harm's way. But I mean, Marquez just looked like such a beast against Pacquiao, and you know, all of a sudden this newfound power at 147, and Bradley was just in such a rough fight his last time out. I got to favor Marquez, possibly by knockout.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't begrudge you that pick. I mean, maybe it's just, and again here, I'm more than happy to throw out that I have a bit of a bias because I do like Bradley, although, you know, I do like Marquez as well. But, you know, I think that pretty much his entire career, Tim Bradley has just been sold short. You know, he's
yeah.
a pretty skilled guy. He's a tough guy. He obviously can, you know, take a licking and keep on ticking, as we've seen, you know, in a number of fights. So, I mean, yeah, I think that you probably should favor Marquez, especially considering the magnitude of the fight that he's coming off of and what happened. But, you know, I think that Bradley's got a significant chance in there.
Yeah, I just think the fight with Provodnikov is one of those where you're just not – there's a lot of question marks about how is this guy going to look his next time out. And I know some of what happened was he, you know, ballooned up in weight, and there's the whole depression mythology after the Pacquiao fight, and he got the decision, but he was widely denounced, and he was getting hate mail and all that stuff, which, you know, is terrible, because I think Tim Bradley seems like one of the, you know, biggest gentlemen in the sport. But, you know, I guess you heard that he didn't have the right camp for the Provodnikov fight. He was having trouble. He, you know, he spent a lot of it cutting weight, and he didn't, you know, train the right way. And who knows how much of that is true or whatever. But the point is, you know, he was just in this brutal war. And, you know, Marquez is coming off of probably the biggest win of his whole career. And it's a Hall of Fame career. So he's got to feel good about getting, you know, finally getting the upper hand in the Pacquiao rivalry. And now he's fighting a guy that Pacquiao, you know, by most accounts, beat pretty handily. And a guy who's coming off of a really tough fight against a fighter, you know, is Ruslan Provodnikov on the level of Marquez. So I think Marquez is going to have a lot of confidence. And but, you know, like you said, I mean, nothing – yeah, Bradley has been sold short because he's, you know, he doesn't have, like, that one special quality other than just how incredibly gritty that he is. But – you know, he's solid in so many aspects, and it seems like, yeah, every one of his big fights, I mean, even against Devin Alexander, I think the trendy pick was Alexander because people felt like he had more upside or he had more kind of talent, even if he wasn't, you know, as good of an all-around fighter. And I think Bradley, even in those 8 or 9 rounds, I mean, really, you know, imposed himself and beat up Alexander, who's a good fighter. So, you know, Bradley, I it's a really interesting fight. I mean, I favor Marquez, but I think it's a great fight on the schedule. Unfortunately, it's pay-per-view, and the undercard is just atrocious.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
Well, what I
was looking at it today, and go ahead.
Go ahead. Well, I was just going to say what I find weird about what you're talking about with, you know, Bradley gaining weight and stuff like that. Well, that in itself I find weird because, as I've always understood it, you know, Bradley's the type of guy who, you know, stays in shape, like really good shape year round and doesn't really balloon up in a lot of weight. So
yeah.
I don't know if, you know, the aforementioned depression, you know, after the Pacquiao fight, which, you know, I totally understand that because there was a huge backlash against that. But, you know, and against him, which was really undeserved because he didn't give himself that decision. But, you know, I wonder if that really played a bigger role than I realized previously because, like I said, he's always seemed to me like a guy that was just shredded, like, year-round. So I wonder how much that's going to come into play.
Yeah, that was strange to hear that about him.
Well, I mean, you know, he lives in the middle of the friggin' desert. And I don't know. I just feel like I just thought that he was the type of dude who trained all the time and stuff.
Wasn't he like in the lead up to the Pacquiao fight? He was jogging like a half marathon a day or something.
Yeah, he was doing some type of like marathon running.
I mean, his workout routines are insane. But you know, he was in a wheelchair after the Pacquiao fight. I mean, he had two broken ankles, and you know, I think he had a sprained tendon in his knee and possible gout.
I mean,
he was laid up for a while, and you can't jog a half marathon in a wheelchair.
Oh, you're flatlining on me there, Foley. You're flatlining on me, dude.
Oh, damn it! I don't know what's going on. Maybe it's that I haven't paid the phone company in months. I don't know.
Yeah, well, that's the price for being a boxing fan.
I don't know what's going on, but I'm going to look into this because we have the special Mayweather Canelo preview, you know, next week, and we got to be in top form for that.
That's right, dude. I've kind of mentioned it on Twitter a couple times because people have asked, but next week we're going to be doing a relatively big show. It's not all confirmed yet, so I'm not going to say what exactly we're doing, but it should be pretty cool.
We're not naming names.
Nope, I'm not gonna throw them out just yet, but it should be pretty cool. But yeah, I'd have to kind of be also concerned as far as Marquez Bradley goes that, you know, how much Marquez really wants to do in the sport at this point because, you know, the Pacquiao rivalry, if you'll call it that, and I guess it's probably pretty fair to, you
hey,
know, that
Patrick,
started in what?
Patrick.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm gonna dial back into you in a second, all right?
Okay.
So, keep going.
Well, I'll keep going.
All right.
All I was saying was that it seems just kind of worrisome to me if you're a Marquez fan because that rivalry started in, what, 2003? And so, over the course of over 10 years, you know, here we are, and he's finally gotten his peace of mind and finally come ahead in their rivalry. So I kind of just wonder how, you know, complacent he might have gotten because of that. And he is a professional. He's a guy that's been fighting for a long time. And so I don't really have much doubt in him in terms of, you know, whether or not he's preparing correctly or anything like that. But in terms of his mind frame, I would think that might be something that, you know, well, I am a Marquez fan. So I think that Marquez fans, you know, should think about that going forward. And I do kind of wonder also, you know, what exactly Marquez wants to do in the sport from this point forward. Because I think it was last week, I want to say it was on boxingscene.com, but I'm not positive because I don't, you know, I don't keep track of the news sources probably as well as I should. But Marquez was just, I think, last week saying that he didn't want to fight Manny Pacquiao for a fifth time. So I do kind of wonder what exactly he wants to accomplish from here on out in the sport, and I think that could be another factor going into the fight. It's just there's a lot of intangibles going into that Marquez-Bradley fight, and I think James is back with us.
I'm back, but I don't know if the problem has been solved. I guess we'll see.
Well, I don't hear beeping anymore. Well, of course, there it goes, but it's really quiet. It's not that big of a deal. It's whatever. If our listeners care, then... Oh, well, stop being babies.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm at a loss here.
Yeah, whatever.
I've tried three different phones here, so I don't...
It's not a big deal.
All right.
Man. Well, that's what you fucking get, U.S. cellular field, dude. What is a cellular? Come on, this is bullshit.
Yeah.
No, I was just saying that, you know, it
hopefully,
could potentially
hopefully
be a word.
My piece about the fights at U.S. Cellular will be out one of these months.
Yeah, well, you know, you got time. You got time, dude.
It's hard out here.
You're working at a, dude, you're working at a major publication. You got time.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, I think I'm doing the Hauser. I'm doing, like, a month later, you know, the postscript.
Yeah, but then you're going to do, like, 19,000 words.
Yeah, it could. It's going to be in three parts.
Yeah, I only had to do that once, an article of that magnitude once, and I don't really think I'm going to do it again. If I do that again, I'm writing a book. That's pretty much all there is to it.
That's probably a good idea.
But let's see what else is coming up, or at least what else can we talk about. Oh, that's right. So it finally got confirmed. I think that we mentioned it last week, but, you know, we ran through a lot of stuff, and I was basically sitting there ejaculating over the Gonzalez-Marez KO the whole show.
Yep, remember that.
You definitely remember that. But Gennady Golovkin versus Curtis Stevens has been officially finalized, and so that fight's going to be coming up.
Yeah, do you believe that asshole Stevens turned down $300,000?
What a jerk. What a douchebag.
Can't believe that guy.
I mean us. We're douchebags. Total douchebags.
Yes, we are. Negotiating.
We are.
Brilliant negotiating by Main Events.
Yeah, we should be managers, needless to say. Jesus, we're dumb. Nah, but it finally got finalized, so there's really nothing to bitch about anymore. It's going to happen. And it's an intriguing fight. I think it's an intriguing fight. I mean, it's perhaps not the level that we're totally expecting from Golovkin, or at least that we're hoping for.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Curtis Stevens does have punching power, and he does have fight-ending punching power, so at least there's something there.
Seems
I'm not
like
too
it.
Confident in its toughness, though.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
what's that?
Well, he's a good puncher, but the caliber of competition hasn't been good. And
well, he's a
good
boy.
I don't know. It doesn't get me too excited, but I understand there's not a whole lot out there for Golovkin right now, and it's good that he's fighting every couple months, and I love watching him fight, so I'm down. I think he's probably going to knock him out early.
You know, the comparison keeps getting made between Golovkin and Matisse, and I keep saying that it's a good comparison, and it just is. Because he's the type of guy now that we've come to know that there's a really good chance that when he fights somebody, somebody's going to get knocked out. And there's a really good chance that it's going to be his opponent.
Yeah.
Just like when Matisse fights. So, I mean, that's the type of thing that a lot of people want to see. People want to tune in to a guy who's most likely going to knock somebody out. So, you know, and I think that if you're going to, once again, if you're going to be betting or putting money on it, that's probably the safest pick, that he's going to wind up stopping Curtis Stevens. But Curtis Stevens is on a little bit of a roll right now. I'm a little bit, you know, I'd be concerned about his toughness and, you know, potential chin issues, I guess. But he does have power. And so at least there's some, you know, opening for him there to win. But, yeah, Golovkin is probably going to march on over and, you know, stomp a mud hole.
Yep.
Yeah. So.
That's my call.
What's that?
Oh,
yeah, that's basically my call, too. Well, shit. We're basically running out of shit to talk about here, Foley. Help me out.
We're done. Well, maybe maybe one last item of conversation, and then I can start prepping for next week's show. You know, it's going to be a big one. But
at least you know that this week, dude. At least you know this week that there's no Friday night fights for you to miss.
Thank God. Whew, hate that show. let's try to dig up some more about this Castle Chalice dude for next week.
I'll have something. I'll try to come up with something.
Yeah, Jesus Christ. What was I thinking here? Oh, just, you know, I know we're going to talk about the whole card next week, and I'm sure we're going to spend most of that on Mayweather and Canelo and then Matisse Garcia.
And we talked, I guess, a little bit last week, too, but what do you think about this Ishae Smith, Carlos Molina, and do you think that guy can be a real contender at 154, somebody who maybe would be an opponent, you know, probably not for Floyd if he wins, but, you know, if it goes Canelo's way? I mean, Garcia Matisse is probably not going to move up to 54 to fight Canelo, so if somehow Canelo beats Floyd, you know, who are the guys he's going to face at junior middleweight? And do you think the winner of this Smith-Molina fight would fit in with, like, you know, Austin Trout, Arislandi Lara, and that whole divisional landscape?
Well, I guess I'll start with Ishae Smith. I mean, I kind of have the feeling about Ishae Smith, even though I've come around a little bit on him, that he seems like a guy to me that will only occasionally show some kind of like flashes of brilliance, I guess you could say, where in some fights he looks really good and, you know, he gets wins and he works fairly consistently and, excuse me, et cetera, et cetera. You know, he boxes well, has fairly, you know, fast hands and all of that stuff. But at the same time, there have been other fights where he kind of just looks like he's sitting around and waiting for something to happen. And that's, you know, he has, gosh, I want to say something like 4 or 5 losses. And I think that just about all of those 4 or 5 losses were in fights where he just seemed to not do enough. And so I think that if you give a guy like Carlos Molina, who is just a really tricky guy, who is frustrating as shit to fight, if you give a guy like that, who just loves to seize those type of openings, that's probably, you know, that's probably not a good thing for Ishae Smith. So if he's going to win that fight, he needs to be fairly consistent with his output, number one. But number two, as far as whether or not the winner figures into the division, it's tough to say, because maybe 2 years ago or so, I would have said that Carlos Molina is a guy that's probably going to be towards the top of the division at this point now. And then, you know, that loss to Kirkland, that somewhat ridiculous loss to Kirkland, kind of just derailed him, and now he's just not really getting as much talk. And I think that he's also the type of guy that, because of his style and because he's skilled and because he's not that well known, it's going to be tough for him to get fights against those upper echelon type of guys.
Yeah, it was a horrible loss against Kirkland, because it just was the worst possible outcome, because he showed how good he is and that he could dominate these guys, but he didn't get the result to take home with them. So he basically gets shut out of, you know, getting good fights. I mean, they don't want to put him in with somebody that he could beat, because he's not with, like, a major promoter.
But he
didn't get the win, so he doesn't get to continue kind of like an upward ascent and actually officially be the guy, you know, beat Kirkland. And he had a tough luck draw against Lara on Friday Night Fights a couple years ago, too. But
go ahead.
Well, I was going to say my most confident prediction, I think, for the 14th, I think Molina's going to dominate Ishae Smith.
I would not be at all surprised.
I just think he's a better fighter. And this is huge.
I wouldn't be surprised
for him,
if that worked him.
Well, you saw how big it was for Ishae to win the belt against Bundridge. You know, and I think how motivated that he was. And I thought Bundridge really didn't fight that well that night. He's really sloppy just in general. But even that night, I mean, he was just kind of all over the place. And Smith fought really well. And it was, you know, huge. He seized the moment. He won the belt. But for Molina, I mean, that's what this is for him. You know, he's finally there having a chance. And I just think he's a better fighter. And I think he's gonna take advantage of it and really decisively win after getting a lot of tough breaks. And, you know, maybe with that belt, he's going to figure into the mix. But what's going to be really interesting, what happens at 154 after the Floyd Canelo fight? I think everything kind of hinges on that.
Yeah, it does. That's basically a huge gravitational force in the division right now, that fight and then those two guys, because of the type of the money and the attention that they bring if you wind up getting a fight with them. And on top of that, I mean, can you really imagine an Ishae Smith or a Carlos Molina fighting either of those guys even the next year or so? Probably not. I mean, I don't see either of those guys really clamoring to fight Ishae Smith or Carlos Molina. So, yeah, I mean, I think that in terms of whether or not they'll be able to compete with that level, I think that whoever wins, between Ishae Smith and Molina, as long as it's a solid win, a convincing win, they probably will be able to compete at that level, but I don't know that they'll actually get those opportunities. I wouldn't bet on it.
Yeah, I'm not sure how Molina, I'm not sure what promoter Molina is with, but I think it's like Warriors Boxing, maybe. But
I know he's been on a lot of Golden Boy shows.
Yeah, but
yeah, I know he's been on a lot of their shows. But yeah, I don't know either.
The money team, so it'll be interesting to see. I mean, if it goes like I think, and if Molina gets that belt, it will be interesting to see whether he'll, you know, figure in with somebody like an Austin Trout or somebody like Arislandi Lara. I mean, I think Golden Boy would like to get the belts because they still have some kind of meaning to them, and so it's good, you know, getting a belt puts you in a good spot to get a big fight.
All I know is that if Carlos Molina wins that fight, his wife needs to go over to Floyd's belt and grind on it.
Yeah, exactly.
Grind right in its face in front of everybody.
Well, and we have Pablo Cano on the undercard.
Yeah, I mean, that actually is, it's not a great undercard. I mean, well, you have Matisse Garcia, which of course is going to be awesome. But as far as big fight undercards go, it's pretty damn good. A lot of the times when they put together, you know, bigger cards like this, undercards just don't stack up. And so, you know, even with a couple fights being somewhat average, that's a pretty good undercard fight.
The undercard of Bradley Marquez is Orlando Cruz against Orlando Salido. And then I think Lomachenko's pro debut. And then Sean Monahan or Monaghan.
Yeah, Monahan, who I've seen live a couple of times and shouldn't really.
I've seen him live, too. He's basically on the undercard of every show in New York.
Yeah, I respect the guy and whatnot. He's
sure.
Speaking of hard workers,
tons,
he goes in there
respect,
and throws.
Tons of respect, but that's
tons of everybody.
I mean, come on, dude. In between the Mayweather card and the Pacquiao card, I mean, I love Marquez Bradley as a main event. But, you know, for $65, and you get that, and then it's just bad. I mean, I think Molina, Ishae Smith is I actually think all four fights on the undercard of – well, obviously, the three undercard fights on the one are better than any of the three fights on Marquez Bradley. And I would think with a fight even the Theophane Cano fight interests me more than Cruz against Salido.
Well,
so,
needless to say, it's not a strong card. If you're buying Marquez Bradley, you're buying it for Marquez Bradley, and that's pretty much it. You know, there aren't going to be a slew of – Orlando Salido fans, you know, tuning in to see that fight, I don't think.
No. Probably not. And,
yeah,
you know, I don't know. It just seems like that's the kind of card where you need a strong undercard. It would really help. You know, it's already kind of more of a hardcore boxing, you know, fan main event. I mean, Marquez and Bradley aren't really superstars on their own. I think Marquez has gotten to be more and more popular, and he's huge in Mexico. But as far as pay-per-view number, you know, they're not expecting a whole lot for this fight. So if you got a really good undercard, you know, that might make a difference, you know, 20%, 25%. You get another 50,000 buys. I mean, that's good for a card like that. But they've done really nothing to make it, you know, and I don't anticipate that the face-off tonight is going to, you know, inspire us to – Well, I already want to see the main event, but you know what I mean? It's like neither of these guys are really going to be that easy to, with the general sports fan, to get any kind of a buzz for this event. And the fact that there's such a weak undercard.
We're
not going to be out there telling our friends, you have to buy this.
Yeah, I can't imagine it doing more than a couple hundred thousand buys. I mean, I'm not really going to speculate or estimate what this or that, you know, card is going to do in terms of pay-per-view buys. But if I had to, I can't imagine it doing a whole lot. But, you know, we'll see. I'll be watching the main event. And I actually am a little bit intrigued by the two Orlandos going at it. But enough that I'm like, oh, my God, that's a must-see undercard. Not really. No, not really.
It could be an okay fight. But the thing is, you know, we've seen Orlando Salido against Mikey Garcia, you know, and it wasn't pretty. I didn't like the way it ended with Garcia basically accepting that, you know, the headbutt and, you know, going to the cards knowing he had a huge lead. But the point is he thoroughly outclassed him and beat him up. Orlando Cruz just isn't on the same level that, you know, maybe he can give Salido a decent fight here because Salido might be a little shop-worn finally. But, you know, neither of these guys are going to be serious contenders again at featherweight. And that's the thing. And the rest of the card is, I mean, Lomachenko is intriguing, but it's you know, it's pro debut. I don't think that's going to, you know, set the American fans' hearts aflame. So, you know, with the one, I mean, Garcia Matisse is legitimate, the best junior welterweight in the world. And, you know, Ishae Smith, Carlos Molina, I mean, the winner of that is, you know, which I think is going to be Molina, and hopefully that this will back up my theory. But, you know, I think Molina is a top five junior middleweight. I think he's a guy who can contend against the best in the division. So, you know, you have like, interesting things that, like, they don't just end on the pay-per-view card. I mean, these are fighters that going forward are going to be involved in more meaningful fights, and that's great. You know, you look at the Marquez-Bradley fight. I mean, where does the winner of Cruz-Salido go? You know, what does Shawnee Monaghan do? I mean, Lomachenko looks awesome, but this is pro debut, a four-rounder. Or actually, no, it's
well,
sorry. Isn't he debuting in, like, an eight-rounder or something like that?
Actually, unless I'm mistaken, I think it's a 10-rounder that he's debuting against. And then
yeah,
if
10-rounder,
wins,
okay. But regardless,
yeah,
it's a fight that he's set up to
well,
win.
Yeah.
It is a tough fight for a pro debut, but it's still, you know. I guess actually,
yeah,
I think I read they want to match him against the winner of the Cruz Salido fight, right?
Yeah, like they were talking about matching him against a handful of different, you know, upper echelon type of guys in like his second or third fight. So obviously they're being fairly ambitious. They're kind of taking an opposite approach to how they're, you know, working with Zhu Xueming, but
that's cool. I mean, that's slightly justifiable. I mean, if that was, like, your opener and then you had two really solid fights underneath Marquez Bradley. But, I mean, that's just going to be a tough sell. I'm probably not going to buy it.
Yeah, hopefully I don't get in trouble for saying this, but I'll probably stream that shit.
Whoop, got. I didn't hear that.
Nope, nobody heard that.
On TopRank.com,
yeah, I mean,
of course, for $59.99.
That's what I meant. That's exactly what I meant. Exactly. Yeah, I'm gonna set up all my drivers and, you know, all my cookies and internets and all that type of stuff.
Yep. But what regardless,
do you say we call it a.
Yeah, let's wrap it up here, and
I'm gonna make
a furious phone call to U.S. Cellular immediately.
That's right, dude. Tell them that they need to have another one of those goddamn cars at their field. All right. Well, everybody who tuned in, sorry for the short show today, but we'll do a big show next week and we'll make up for it. So in the meantime, hopefully a lot of people listen today, but we'll check it out and we'll see you next week. Check out QueensberryRules.com where I write for and BadLeftHook.com where James Foley writes for. All right, everybody, take it easy.